The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, what I want to try to talk about this evening is living with tension. And in certain kinds of ways, meditation is used to relieve tension, to let go of it, to relax. And you can do it pretty deeply. It's possible in deep meditation where there's no sense of any tension left in the body whatsoever, no tension in the mind. And it's quite educational to do that. So we learn a lot about ourselves, the process of getting that relaxed or peaceful. We learn a lot about what happens when we lose it afterwards. But one of the problems with getting relaxed like this in meditation is the assumption that you're always supposed to be relaxed. And that creates more tension. The idea that that's what you're supposed to do. Because there's many kinds of tension, and some tensions are inherent in how we live our lives, or how we think about our lives, or how we relate to our lives. And so certain concepts that we live under, if we live with those concepts, and they're reasonable concepts to live under, maybe we have to live with them, belong to polarities or dualities that can never be quite the way it is. But we think we want it to be that way. And so wanting it that way, then there's a tension or opposition against other ways. So one example of this is the inherent tension between tradition and innovation, tradition and progress. The conservative forces of our society, you know, where there's politics, religion, all kinds of ways, and that those that want to have innovation and change and progress. And you know, they kind of live together. They can't really separate one from the other. And if you have the idea that one way is the right way, then the other way is made the wrong way. But if they live in a kind of creative tension together, then and we learn how to kind of accept the tension, then it's possible to kind of work with it and find new ways that aren't really so easy if we hold on to one side or the other. Another tension that is kind of inherent in the way most people live their lives, I think, is the tension between being an individual, a unique individual, and belonging and being part of a group, being part of society, being part of a family, doing something. And for some people that is quite painful. Some people, the sense of not belonging is quite painful. It's the biggest drive they have in their lives, of some people, to belong and be connected and fit in. Other people, their big drive is to get out of that. They feel oppressed by having been in some certain social situations, family or communities or something, where they couldn't be themselves in the way that was important for them. And so they kind of had to leave to go someplace else where they can be an individual or be themselves. Some people, the pendulum swings to becoming an individual, which is nice in many ways, but then at some point it gets lonely, you know, or sometimes the idea of belonging becomes more interesting again. And I've seen in some people the pendulum swing back and forth. And sometimes people don't recognize that there's a kind of, these live in a creative tension. You can't have one without the other. And so if we insist too much on one way, then we're setting up a kind of opposition or tension or that's going to arise because the other has to be there as well. And so it varies from person to person what degree this is. The kind of a little bit of a silly example of being an individual, unique, special, do it your own way and don't want to, you know, have to deal with other people, is the person who decides to make up their own language. Because, you know, why should they have to deal with, you know, anybody else's language? It's kind of oppressive. You never chose to be born into the culture that has a certain language, and it seems a bit absurd that you should have to now accommodate all these other people who speak that language, so you make up your own language. But the problem with making up your own language is that language is used for communication. And so then you can't communicate with anyone, and you're all alone. And that language, you know, the only person you can talk to is yourself. So the idea of kind of really insisting on being your own person, it kind of really doesn't work, because what it is to be a human being is to be a social animal. But if you insist on being a social animal too much, that can be oppressive. And so then, you know, where do you fit? Where do you fit in the spectrums, like spectrums? And those spectrums kind of have a tension inherent in them. Another one that's interesting, I think, especially people doing something like meditation practice or spiritual practice, but almost any discipline at all, is the tension between allowing and discipline. When do you just simply allow your children to be their children, and when do you discipline your children? When do you just allow yourself to be who you are, as you are, and when do you discipline yourself to do something? If you want to learn to play a new musical instrument, and you know, I'll just allow whatever feels like I'm going to do. You know, you might be a musical genius, and it doesn't matter. You'll pick it all up, and it'll be great. But most people who learn a musical instrument will have to have some discipline. They have to do it regularly. They have to maybe do scales or to kind of practice regularly. And just simply allowing your fingers to do whatever they want comes later. After a person has mastered a lot of, you know, music and music ability, then at some point a lot of freedom comes. But, you know, how much allowing, how much discipline you do, and I don't know if this is true at all, but I thought, I was told this by a yoga teacher, and I think it had to do with ballet, not yoga. But the idea was that the people who mastered that craft, that art, the most, were the ones when they were growing up and being taught it, were not told that this is exactly the form. There wasn't a strict discipline, like this is how it's done. But there was a kind of like, this is how it's done, and then people did it the way they did it, and they weren't corrected. And somehow, then slowly over time, they grew into becoming great dancers. But the people who were always, their teachers always insisted there was a right way, strict way to do it, then they, you know, somehow that maybe thwarted some kind of creativity. So when is it that creativity comes with allowing something to be expressed from within, and when does creativity come with discipline and work and, you know, effort over time that creates a foundation for some kind of creative activity? I think sometimes there's kind of a tension between, there's a spectrum that we live under. And part of this tension that we live under, if it's accurate enough what I'm saying, is partly because of the idea that things should be a certain way. That it should be traditional. That's the right way. Or there should be innovation. There should be, my own voice and be my own person. It should be, you know, that we all, you know, should be together and harmonize and conform with each other. It should be that we should be disciplined and do things just this way. It should be that there should be allowing and creativity and discovery and new ways. As opposed to, as long as there's this should, then we're not exactly in harmony with what is. Because a should is an idea, is a judgment. And so we see now, I think, in American politics, there's a lot of tension, political tension we live under. And how much of that political tension has its genesis in people's ideas of should? Things should be a certain way. I think that's reasonable to have those ideas. I'm not saying we shouldn't have shoulding. But it is interesting to think of to what degree is political tension involved with ideas of should. A little bit abstract thinking. And then if the thinking is a little bit should, which is a little bit abstract from what's actually happening, does that create a tension with what's happening? And what is the nature of that tension? And who is it that lives in that tension? And for many of us live in this tension. Some people live in the tension, I'll say it this way. One of the reasons I want to talk about this today is that I think there's a lot of tension that comes with being a human being we can't avoid. But it's not necessarily wrong or bad to have certain kinds of tension, provided we know how to be wise about it, provided that we can learn not to be reactive to it. And some people, when they get tense, they feel uncomfortable. And when we feel uncomfortable, sometimes there's a reactivity to it. And then there's part of the should is, I shouldn't be this way. And I want to avoid it. It needs to be fixed. I need to blame. I need to attack. I need to run away. I can't deal with this. But sometimes it's really helpful to be able to learn how to relax with the tension. Not relax the tension itself, but to be at ease and allow there to be tension in the situation. Because there's a form of creative tension that if we hang in there and are able to be relaxed and present for that tension, then we might learn something new about it. We might learn how to be present for it without being seduced by the shoulds, seduced by trying to fix it, seduced by choosing one side over the other too quickly. So we don't hear the other side. We don't understand the bigger picture and how all this works together, how the pendulum swings and how these tensions, these spectrums, morph and move back and forth between it. There was an interesting story that's told in our Vipassana insight movement. Every 3 years, there's a kind of an international insight meditation teachers meeting. And it meets either at Spirit Rock here in Marin County in California, or at IMS in Massachusetts, or in Gaia House in England. So it rotates. Teachers go to it. And these started very early on, and I think in the maybe as early as the 1970s, but sometime early on, maybe in the 1980s, mid-80s, they had a meeting, and the teacher body then was pretty small, maybe, I don't know how many, half a dozen or 10 or so teachers. Now there's, a lot more. And it turned out that in this group of teachers, there were the progressive liberal teachers and the conservative traditional teachers. And there were two of them that were kind of like, on the opposite ends of the poles of those. And there was a tension in the room between, this polarity. And there was this brilliant, he eventually became a teacher as well, but kind of a brilliant teacher, a therapist, psychotherapist, who was there. I think he was invited in to facilitate. And so he said, okay, one, I don't know which one was first, but maybe let the progressive person, that person who's most progressive, let the person leave the room. And that person left the room. And then the therapist turned to everyone in the room and said, now, if this person wasn't part of the teaching scene, one of the teachers, what would happen? And they looked around, they thought, and they said, oh, well, I think we would all switch a little bit to the left. We'd all switch to be a little more progressive. And then they had the person come back in and had the more liberal person leave the room. He asked the same question, oh, we would all move a little bit more to be more traditional. The idea being that they all kind of needed each other, or they were a system that worked together, and they could take the positions they had, partly because of the positions other people took. And so they didn't have to take it, but they kind of naturally would swing kind of towards the middle maybe, if they weren't there or kind of come in. But without seeing that, they just lived in opposition, in the tension that was tense. They could still have tension. But when they saw that, I think that everyone was much more relaxed about it and found that they could work with it more easily. And some of the, there were some really heads being knocked against each other around this before that little exercise. So one of the things, one of the things to learn in mindfulness meditation, to learn meditation, is to learn how to be comfortable with discomfort. Because if we are not able to hang out with being uncomfortable, we're not going to learn and see and be present to look at what's happening in the bigger picture and the smaller picture and ourselves. Discomfort maybe shouldn't be seen as a problem. Discomfort means that something needs to be understood. Something, we need to learn something. But if we react to the discomfort, are quick to get rid of it, quick to ignore it, then there's no learning. There's no going deeper into it to understand. So if we can be comfortable with the discomfort, to sit and breathe and relax and just, this is not what I like, this is uncomfortable, this is maybe, whatever it is, but breathe and allow for it and not get afraid, not get angry, not get spin out in thoughts of fixing it. Just breathe and be, well, this is discomfort. The wind blows on a spring day and the sun is hot on a summer day and the birds chirp early in the morning and I'm uncomfortable. It's like kind of a natural thing as opposed to a crisis. It's a very powerful skill to learn, to sit and be uncomfortable and just to be comfortable with it, kind of, okay, this is how it is. And that skill then can translate to these situations where there's inherent tension in the system, in the way we talk, or in the way that we formulate things. And then we can be comfortable with that tension. Again, that doesn't mean condoning it or accepting it or agreeing with any one side of it, but it means that because we're comfortable in the tension, we can hang in there, look more deeply, try to understand the situation more deeply, perhaps more willing to see the other person's point of view rather than being us versus them. And find our way in a nice way. One of the things about I've seen is I've been in a lot of tense situations with tension, and it's remarkable how when there's one person who's able to sit in the middle of it and be relaxed, name it, understand it, not really take sides, even though they might have a position, it seems like everyone begins to listen to each other more carefully. Everyone begins to settle down as opposed to stay kind of in tension or in opposition with each other. So I imagine that this is not what many people think meditation is for, to be wisely tense. But maybe it's realistic to have that as a goal for the kind of lives many of you live. It's maybe more realistic to think about how can you be wise and relaxed or open or around the situations where you feel tense than it is to think about how can I get rid of this tension. There might be more learning and more growing up, more development, spiritual development from staying present and feeling it than making it go away. I wanted to read this, what I think is a lovely poem by Norman Fisher, a Zen teacher here in the Bay Area. And I think this poem kind of talks to this, little bit to this idea of this tension that we can live under in a kind of an amusing way. The poem is called A Model of the Universe. What we want is a model of the universe that includes everything, leaving nothing out. Yet, is completely different, fresh, unique, holding nothing in common with any of its constituent elements, yet is not strange, exotic, and does not make us feel uncomfortable. What we want is a model of the universe that we can read about in a magazine article with pictures. Yet it can't be just another magazine article, and it can't be in a regular magazine. This magazine will glow as it shimmers before our eyes. What we want is a model of the universe that will answer all our questions, to which we can refer for all sorts of advice, to foretell the future, cure bursitis, get rich quick, aphrodisiac, etc. And will be absolutely foolproof 100% of the time. What we want is a model of the universe that we can talk to coyly. We can droop our eyelids at, plump our lower lips, and begin to sniffle. And it will pat our shoulders and say, "There, there, dear." Grow sad and droopy itself. But without ever losing its composure or assurance. What we want is a model of the universe so complex we can never understand it. So simple we can grasp it in a glance and explain it to our friends via a few simple sentences. What we want is a model of the universe that once in our possession becomes identified so strikingly with us that we become internationally famous. Our names, household words, the meaning of our doing and saying, an internally living legacy around which all subsequent culture is organized. What we want is a model of the universe we can count on time after time, yet is never tiring, never predictable, eternally new. What we want is a model of the universe that is better than someone else's model of the universe. That makes their model of universe look really pale by comparison. Although only we realize this, we and our intimate friends. But our model of the universe is also better than the model of the universe of even our intimate friends. Although the fact of the matter is that no one but us really possess a model of the universe. It is our little secret. However, we write poems about it that strike others as infinitely suggestive and profound. But since it makes, since this makes us feel lonely, we want a model of the universe that everyone understands. We want a model of the universe that explains everything, yet doesn't take the mystery out of anything. In fact, adds mystery even to the simplest of daily actions. A model of the universe that keeps us fit, and eating delicate and healthy foods, a model of the universe in which we appear never overweight nor old. Yet we don't want to actually appear in this model of the universe. We want to be beyond it, holding it in our hand, looking at it from a distance. Yet we don't want to feel alien from it either. We want love. We want a model of the universe in which we can always stay home, yet be able to travel whenever we want to remote places, where all foreign languages are actually English. though they never lose their ethnic charm. What we want is a model of the universe contiguous with the total shape of time, so that it neither begins nor ends, is neither something nor nothing. What we want is a model of the universe in which this poem, therefore, never ends and in which it never began. So maybe you got a little bit more some sense of this idea of having these, it should be one way, but we don't want it just that way. It has to be the other way too, and this tension. Sometimes we swing back and forth between them, these ideas. And sometimes people swing much too often and react too strongly, that we wouldn't do if we learned to be at peace with the tension. We just relax, we can breathe. Oh, this is a tense situation, this is uncomfortable. And maybe it doesn't have to always be different than how it is. The movement of should, it should be something. The movement, I want it to be different, I want it to be somehow, takes us out of the moment, takes us out of the possibility of just being relaxed in the present moment. Being relaxed with what's happening doesn't mean we condone it. What it means is that we're relaxed. And from that being at ease with it, then hopefully we can, you know, not reactive to it, then we can have more understanding of when, what we have to fix, what we should change, how we be in conversation with people, and how we maybe talk about these tensions, or talk about the spectrums, or talk about the range of views and positions we have. Rather than it being a wall between one side or the other, if we see that many of these things exist in a spectrum, then maybe it's easier to be in conversation with other people, because they're just kind of like one end of the spectrum. And maybe in an odd way, maybe not so odd, maybe we need the people that sometimes we live in tension with in certain situations, as opposed to being one way or the other. I've thought about this for a long time in American politics. It's a strange animal. It seems, to my little understanding of political history, that politics tends to swing from one end side to the other. And somehow that swinging in politics is how the country finds its way. And it's very unfortunate for some people on one end of the spectrum to see it swing to the other side. But maybe that's one of the ways, it's kind of like the rhythm in which there's kind of slowly over time something evolves and grows and develops. Because we certainly are different than we were in 1776. And, you know, or even 10 years ago or 20 years ago. So if that's the nature of it, to have these swings and these pendulums, that this is how the tension plays itself out, then do we step back from it, participate in it, but not get so tightly involved like it should be one way. But rather we participate, maybe we help the swing in one direction or the other, for sure. But you know, we see it as a system, as it's inherent in the whole thing to have the tension. Maybe it's not a mistake. Maybe it's how we find our way forward in a certain kind of way. So that's a little bit of, you know, maybe pop politics on the side of Gill here. So I apologize if it seems simplistic. But what I'm trying to point to, the main thing I'm trying to point to today, is this idea that there are inherent tensions that exist in many situations in life, and that if we can accept the tension, be relaxed about it, then sometimes we can find a wise way forward. And one of the kind of prime examples I have in my own life for this is when I'm talking with someone, we're trying to figure something out, and we have two different ideas of what's supposed to happen. And so we're kind of, you know, you could say, and conventionally, we're in opposite positions. We're in a tension between us. And sometimes we're having this conversation and going back and forth, and the other person will tell me, okay, I give up, you can have your way. And something like that. And I say, no, that's not how it should be. I don't want my way this way, that easily. I want us to stay in the tension. I want us to stay, kind of staying connected, and keep talking about it, even though it feels a little bit tense. Let's hang in there, because if we hang in there long enough, there's a creative tension that gets formed, and maybe we'll discover a new solution that works for both of us that we couldn't have figured out unless we stayed there in with the difficulty and the tension. And I've seen so many times in my life where this is how it works out. And so the third option that we hadn't thought about until we hung with attention, allowed it to be there, didn't look for quick answers or give up because it was uncomfortable. So this also happens, you know, internally within ourselves, to sit and meditate with our discomfort, to be able to breathe and relax and be with it. We don't know what's being worked out. We don't know what's trying to find its way in our hearts, in our psyche, in our minds. But if we come to quick solutions or quick ideas or quick judgments of what's happening, we might be missing a very important opportunity. If you go and relax, get relief, if you check out or go away from the inner discomfort that you have, you might be doing yourself a tremendous disservice. There are certain kinds of inner discomforts which are not meant to be problems, but meant to be kind of the stepping stone to the next point of growth, the third option, or the new option that you never heard of before. So this idea of sitting down and not thinking of meditation as necessarily a place to get peaceful and relaxed, but a place where we can really be with what is and learn how to be with whatever is here in a relaxed, open-handed, open-hearted, open-minded way. If it's very comfortable and peaceful to be with that in an open-handed way. If it's uncomfortable to be with that in an open-handed way, just allow it to be there. Feel, be present. Study it, get to know it. Find out how we react to it and how we push it away or grasp or get angry or get afraid. See if there's secondary reactions, we can let them fall away. And just be with the simplicity of it. I've had plenty of opportunity in my years of meditation practice to be uncomfortable. And I've done every possible strategy of trying to avoid it. You probably have done as well. I've done this for 40 years. It's long enough to have tried a few things out. And I've generally found that trying to avoid, it doesn't work very well. But trying to be present, what I've learned is that, what I've said earlier, what I've learned is that often some deeper inner discomfort that I have, sometimes in the form of depression, sometimes in the form of anxiety, sometimes in the form of just agitation, stress, sometimes just something important is bubbling, working its way, finding its way. Something that I need to see clearly. But if I, go for a quick fix, go for a quick relaxation, go for, something. If I use, now they have all these wonderful meditation apps. And, you can get into these, different zones, wonderfully. Some people get quickly concentrated or peaceful in these apps. That's nice. But when are they going to be uncomfortable? When are they going to be agitated? You don't want to bypass it. It's not supposed to be a drug, meditation. Mindfulness meditation is a way, in a mature, upright, dignified, valued way, to stay present in the middle of the life as it is, and in doing that, to wake up, doing that, to find our way, and doing that, see what wants to come and grow within us, that we won't make space for if we just have an app that gets us concentrated. So I guess if it was a little, one little saying to summarize this talk by, that you have to understand in context of the talk. Don't just take it, go home and say, this is what Gil said. But so this little summary is, let yourself be uncomfortable. That's it. So, are some of you now uncomfortable with the talk and you'd like to talk about that? Or do you have any questions or comments or testimonials that you'd like to offer?
That was wonderful, Gil. It just reminded me how I was taught growing up to love and appreciate the fringes of society, because that is what keeps us going from going over the edge and, any one way, that there is kind of purpose in the kind of extremes. And it's something you can learn from and being uncomfortable with them. Also, I was struck by, you know, there's a discomfort in, like, sometimes people say, it's unfair, this situation's unfair, that's unfair, and they stop right there and are uncomfortable with the fairness of life. And I found something really helpful is to keep in mind that it's actually a good thing that everything's not fair, because if it was fair, every time you sped, went over 5 miles an hour over the speed limit, you would get a speeding ticket. That would be fair. So sometimes it helps you hold the discomfort and fairness and unfairness by going, it's kind of good. Life
Great.
Isn't fair.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, you mentioned music early in the talk, and I found myself thinking about these polarities in the great musical bands and songwriters. So, you know, the most glaring might be Lennon and McCartney, where, you know, McCartney had this kind of happy-go-lucky kind of impish quality, and Lennon was, you know, the heavy in the picture. So, you know, some of the greatest work is when they have to meet in the middle, you know, and they had to kind of join together. But the tension of that, those collaborations are often so tumultuous and painful for the participants, so they spin out. Yes. And then you get, you know, McCartney doing silly love songs or something. He's just left to his completely, you know, impish, innocuous kind of personality. Yeah.
Which is also good.
What?
It's also all good, but in terms of music that way. But yeah, the tension, and if they learn to, you know, they gotten the lesson that I was trying to teach today about being relaxed about tension, allowing for it, working with it, maybe they would have stayed together longer, and we would have more music. Imagine the music that should have been there. Was, you know, they're waiting to be written. If only they knew how to be comfortable with tension. We have the mic back over here.
Hello.
Oh, yes. The green light should be on the side.
Okay. So what do you do, or what do you think you should do if you become too comfortable with the tension? Because sometimes it feels like it just moves too fast.
Oh.
So it's like you can see it, and you notice it, but then your mind just drifts, and then do something else.
Yeah. So what comes to mind to me when you say too comfortable with attention is that sometimes there are uncomfortable, tense situations that people are too complacent, too willing to be accepting of, too willing to be kind of get out of the way and okay, you know, just... and that's, you know, if we give in to... maybe giving in too easily to it. The kind of comfort with discomfort I'm talking about is one that we can use to look at it and address it more directly if it needs to be addressed. It's not the kind of way of just complacently giving in or saying, you know, okay, it's all okay and I'll just... You know, I'm just a good Buddhist and I just breathe with everything. You know, it's some things need to be addressed. And some things should be addressed quite strongly. But we don't have to be tense. We don't have to be tense because of that kind of tension. We don't have to be, you know, what I'm hoping is that if we can be relaxed or learn to be comfortable with the discomfort, it actually gives us more power, more ability to look things directly in the eye and address them when they need to be addressed. Is that kind of what you had in mind?
Yeah, thank you.
Great, thank you. So the last one, yes.
I'm just going to say that I think it's probably very helpful if, when you're living with these differences of opinion, that you find a way that is respectful and where mutuality is involved, if you are going to voice your opinion so that both sides feel they're being heard, both or multiple sides. I think that would be really helpful. I think the system breaks down when that doesn't happen.
Right, I think so. So one of the nice theories to operate under is a theory that we all need each other. And so we need to also listen to each other and the different points of views, and then slowly find a way to kind of find common ground. So thank you. And if this talk made you uncomfortable, that's okay. I guess. And if you want to talk to me about it, I'll be here for a while. Thank you.